Hey, Martin, what's going on?
Oh, well, hot diggity dog, I'm doing absolutely rootin' tootin' fine.
Oh, dear, sorry.
Sorry. That's really bad, isn't it?
I do apologize.
We're talking in American accents, and there's a reason for that. All will be explained in this episode of Nullpoix.
Yes, that's right. We didn't have a funny turn there. There was a reason behind us talking in American accents, because the Eurovision Song Contest is coming to America.
Well, it is and it isn't. So this isn't going to be the Eurovision Song Contest just being broadcast in America. I mean, I think there are places you can see it in America, not very many, but I think you can probably find it on some obscure cable channel somewhere. No, this is the American Song Contest. The EBU has announced that will be a thing. It takes place during what they're saying the holiday season of 2021. So I suppose that's kind of July, August sort of time. And it will basically be an American version of Eurovision as we know it, but rather than having European countries and also Australia and Israel and Azerbaijan, there will be the 50 American states all competing against each other in not just semi-finals, but other rounds before that. And then they will have a huge primetime grand final watched by the entire country, and it will follow a very similar feel to Eurovision. So this is a big play from the EBU for the American market.
It certainly is, and we should mention that we've got a special guest coming up later in the show who we're going to go into a bit more detail about this and about their podcast, the Eurotrip podcast. We'll be talking to James Rowe a little bit later about his reaction to all of this. But my reaction, I would say, is thank goodness this is the way they're getting the Americans involved, because there was a danger that they just thought, hey, why don't we let Americans get involved? And maybe the thought was, well, we'll do it this way so that they understand how it works and then we'll get them involved. That's the worry a little bit, that maybe this is like a sort of gateway drug to the Eurovision. They have their own kind of contest and then they get a little bit hooked on it. And then they move on to the bigger stuff, the harder Class A's of Eurovision Song Contest.
Yes, I think you're the first person to ever make an analogy between the Eurovision Song Contest and Class A drugs. But hey, that's what you get on Nullpoix. I kind of agree with you, not on the drug thing, but on the route for Americans into this. I suppose if it gets some Americans interested in Eurovision and kind of getting what we like about it, fine. We have long not been proponents of the Americans actually entering the competition because we don't think that they understand it. And that would be my reservation about this whole thing, as is yours, Chris, that it would be getting people to... It would be this pathway for the Americans to get involved. And then where does it stop?
Yeah.
You know, you have the Canadians and just the Chinese Song Contest. You know, where does it stop? It stops becoming Eurovision and it becomes World Vision. I know that's not really what Eurovision means in this particular case, but it's always been a European thing. And the more and more that you sort of expand it from that, you lose the feeling of it, and you lose the kind of homeliness of it that we've known and loved for so long.
And I think the thing is, while you're saying that maybe some Americans will get into the Eurovision Song Contest from the American Song Contest, I don't think the American Song Contest is going to be anything like the Eurovision Song Contest. I think it's going to be so different. It's going to have its own brand. It's going to be its own thing. And it's probably not going to feel anything like it, only in the sense that people are competing with songs. I think the rest of it's going to be so different. I think it will be interesting to see the different states being represented, much as we have different countries represented, and whether there'll be the same kind of neighbourly voting system. Will neighbouring states vote for each other? Will there be that kind of element of it?
So I think, what My word, political voting in the American Song Contest. My goodness.
So I'm actually quite excited to see it, just to see how it evolves in America. But if they could just keep it separate, that would be great.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. And I think I agree as well that the American Song Contest will just be actually, in reality, it might keep the format, but the way it feels will be nothing like Eurovision.
It's not going to be camp, is it? It's just going to... It'll be very earnest. It'll be people sort of really actually wanting to win and doing it in
that.
A very... I know. I'm not used to that in the UK. but yeah, it'll be people, you know, generally just highlighting the voice. And I wonder if there'll be much staging to it, because obviously the staging is a huge part of Eurovision. Sometimes staging can win over song, to be honest, if they've got the right gimmick. And I don't know if the Americans will want to go into that thing, whether it would just be a straight song contest. I mean, I don't think there's ever been a statewide song contest before in America, so that in itself is quite exciting. But I just can't see them doing it the same way. There's not going to be loads of campness, is it? It's going to be very straight, state by state singing. If they could draw, if there were some gimmicks, I think that would make it a lot more fun, but I don't know if I can see them going for it.
No, I think it's very much going to be more like the what do they have over there, the X Factor and American Idol type situation, rather than the song contest as we know it. I do wonder how they'll go about doing the voting, because obviously part of our enjoyment is the fact that the voting takes forever and is often hilarious, sort of for the wrong reasons. The Americans won't get that.
No.
They will just find it boring. So I wonder whether that might play a part in the way the format works. Just a word about like the finance and business side of this, because presumably this is being licensed by the EBU and is being bought by an American network. I'm guessing, I don't have the full details. That's my understanding of what's going on here. So that then presumably is going to bring in some money for the EBU, who what may be able to use it to make future Eurovisions bigger and better with extra funding.
Definitely. I mean, you can see why it makes sense why they've done it in that case. But yes, I presume that that is what's going to happen. I mean, I'm also thinking, obviously, just across America alone, there are so many different time zones and you know, time differences. So how they will broadcast this show so everyone is able to watch it at a proper time itself is going to be very difficult, because, I mean, I guess they manage that in Europe, but it's not quite a leap in hours as much. I mean, obviously, apart from Australia, but, you know, deal with it.
Yes, don't worry about them. They watch it on record anyway, don't they?
They do what they like.
Well, no, it's interesting, actually, because I always think this. I think the Eurovision Song Contest starts very late, because it starts at 8 p.m. in the UK. Now, we are the furthest west of all the time zones, and we are starting at 8, which means it starts in most of Western Europe at 9, and then in some places at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Now, that seems very late.
But
surely it would make more sense to start it at 6 o'clock here, 7 in places like France and Spain and Germany and that sort of thing. But they don't. So I'm not sure that necessarily the time zone's going to play a massive issue, because there are only three or four time zones in America?
I think it's four, yeah. I say with no certainty at all.
You've got Eastern and Western, and then I think there are two in the middle, Mountain and
something
else. Oh, no, maybe it's only three.
Maybe
it's only three. If you're an American and you know how many time zones you have,
get in touch.
Let us know.
Au revoir, Noel, on Twitter. NoelPoirPodcast@gmail.com. And also, the thing is, the Europeans just like to stay up late, though, Martin. We all know this. Whereas, you know, we like to have our things
drinking
early. These Europeans, they're very late with their parties. So for them, it's probably too early still. They're probably like, oh, I'm only just eating dinner when it's 11. So
yeah, that's true. Well, it's a lot hotter, isn't it, than a lot of the rest of Europe. So they stay up later. Well, there we go. So that's some interesting news then. We will talk about that more in just a second. But the big news, the Eurovision Song Contest is going stateside.
Yeehaw!
Well, you'll know on this podcast, we like to let you know about other podcasts that we think you might enjoy if the Eurovision Song Contest is your thing. Lots of other things to listen to out there, and we'd like to find out a little bit more about it. So we were very excited to hear about a relatively new podcast called The Euro Trip. It's presented by Rob Lilly and James Rowe. And James from the podcast is with us. James, thank you so much for coming on and having a chat. Congratulations, first of all, on the podcast. Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for inviting me on. It's always a pleasure to have a chat with some other Euro fans out there. So Rob kind of had the Euro trip going for probably about 7 years now in some various forms, you know, writing articles. It was a student radio show at one point as well. And then earlier in the year, after we'd done Eurojury together, which was an online TV show to try and predict the result of the contest, he just sort of had a chat. We just had a chat together and he sort of said, do you fancy trying to relaunch the podcast, but, you know, do it every week, get some good features on, get some guests on and a few games and try and make a big run of it. And in the past couple of weeks, we've put some effort in. We've got some games going. We've had some big guests. We've had some interviews recorded and it's all starting to be a very, very exciting.
Now, tell us about these games, James. Give us some examples about what you've got planned for the show.
Well, one of them is a bit of a quiz, because under lockdown, I think we've all started to do quizzes over Zoom and we can't quite get enough of them. So we've enlisted one of our good friends to give us a quiz on a European country each week. So for the first week, we had Switzerland. So he gave us a little bit of a quiz about that. But one of them also had a tenuous link to their Eurovision past, which is very, very fun. And then another one of the games is the 1 second song. So if you think you're a Eurovision fan, come along and play the 1 second song, because we play each other the first second of a song from the 65 years of the contest. Ooh. And we have to try and guess what that song is from just the very first second. And I assure you, as much of a fan you might think you are, it is very, very difficult.
Oh, yeah. I believe you on that. That is very, very difficult indeed. You mentioned games. You also mentioned big name guests. Now, this is the really exciting stuff, because there are some people who have performed at Eurovision. You've been speaking to some pretty big people.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I mentioned earlier on that I produced Eurojury, and obviously we had a lot of contacts from there. We had loads of names and contact numbers and email addresses from some other past participants of the contest. So when we started to come up with the idea, I said to Rob, well, we've got all these email addresses, we've got all these phone numbers, we should try and just give some of them a call and see if they're up for it. So we've got about 8 interviews in the bag already, some Eurovision participants, potentially some winners coming down the line as well, but then some, you know, guys that you didn't know did Eurovision, so some backing singers, some backing dancers who have been to the contest, who have lived the entire experience, but have got some extraordinary stories that you've probably never even heard of before.
Yeah, and I suppose they're the stories that are really, could be just as interesting as the, you know, Conchita Wurst story. Actually, the person who's doing the backing, they probably see a lot more of the other stuff that goes on than someone like massive like Conchita would, because she's in her own world, I would imagine, so focused on a performance, she probably isn't seeing a lot of the other stuff that's going on, whereas your backing singer is getting all the goss.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. The first interview we had on the podcast was with a guy called Eric Gabriel, and he's from Sweden. He's competed in Sweden's Melfest before, but also back in 2018, he was a backing singer and dancer for Moldova. And for anybody who's listening who can't quite remember the staging for Moldova, it was the one where there was the 3 singers on stage, but they also had the sort of lookalikes behind them, and they had the doors open.
Yeah, that was so good.
Yes.
Yeah, so I remember finding out that he was part of it, and I get on with him very, very well, and I said, do you fancy coming on to have a quick chat about it? And he said, yeah, for sure. So it was great to find out how he got that role on stage for Moldova. Obviously, coming from Sweden, it seems almost extraordinary that you'd get a job for Moldova, but he did. And one of the reasons, which, you know, when you said, you know, we're trying to find out these little stories that you don't hear elsewhere, one of the reasons he got the job for Moldova was because he'd had experience on stage wearing high heels, and one of the backing dancers for Moldova needed to wear high heels, so he was the obvious candidate.
They were like, we must get this guy, he's got all the criteria, he can wear high heels and he likes Eurovision. So why did, or how did you first get into Eurovision yourself then, James? Has it been a long running love, or has it been a recent thing?
that's the thing. It's probably been about a decade. I don't really have, you know, I can't really pinpoint the exact moment that I remember watching it. I've got a few memories of some contests in the late 2000s, so 2008, 2009 sort of. But I remember for the first time properly sitting down and watching it was 2010. And then me and my brother used to watch the semi-finals together because our mother wasn't really interested. And then slowly but surely we got our mother interested and our friends interested. And yeah, and now it's just sort of, rather than once a year or those three nights in May, it's a daily thing now. You know, there's so many songs being released by former artists and national selection programs on in the early part of the year. And there's just so much going on and so many friendly faces that you get to know that it just becomes this one big community that you just can't really escape once you're involved.
And some pretty big changes as well over the years, even in the decade that you've been talking about watching it. And that kind of brings me on to something we've been talking about on the podcast today. And I wondered your thoughts on it. This idea of an American song contest, which is meant to be happening 2021. And the idea, I'm guessing, is that they're going to have the different states competing against each other and doing a sort of Eurovision-esque thing, but just in the United States. What are your thoughts?
Do you know what? I'm all for it. Go for it. Because it's all well and good getting the brand out there. You know, Eurovision is primarily a European-based event, but if the rest of the world wants to get involved, then so be it. But so long as they keep it to themselves. If you want to do an American song contest for the 50 states, go for it. So long as you don't come over here and try and get the USA as a fully-fledged member of the contest. It's great having Australia in. We've got good reasons for having Australia in there. But if we're going to have a separate American Song Contest with 50 different states, so 50 different songs and performers, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. But I think the last thing anybody really wants is for us to get, you know, potentially a 42nd or 43rd country of the USA in the Eurovision Song Contest, because I just think it would kind of ruin it a little bit. Great that they're going to have their own, but let's keep them away from ours.
Yes, I think I agree with that, to be honest. It's like, that's great. You can have your own thing. And the thing is, it will be so different from the actual Eurovision. It will be almost unrecognisable, I imagine. I mean, I'd be quite interested to watch it because it sounds like it's going to be quite a big thing.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, I'd love to watch it. You know, for us here in Europe, we get about 40 songs, so we get to the two semi-finals and obviously the final. But if they're going to have all 50 states taking part, and we're going to see so much more from the American music scene, because obviously, don't get us wrong, in the, you know, in the UK charts and the UK music scene, we get a lot of American artists, don't we? We hear a lot of their music. But if we're going to get 50 potentially lesser known artists, it's only going to be a good thing for us viewers to sort of expand our musical taste, really.
Do you think the Americans get it? I mean, in general, of course, and I'm sure there will be some who get it, but do you think in general an American audience get what it is that we love so much about Eurovision that it'll actually translate over to an American Song Contest?
I probably wouldn't say they do get it, really, because even if you think about the casual fan here in the UK, I mean, somebody who would just watch the final here in the UK, I guess they don't really get it. And they could have been watching it for 20, 30 years, for example. So if you look at it, some, you know, just the a basic American, and I mean that in the nicest possible way, of course, but if they're going to watch it, I don't think they're necessarily going to get it. But I think that's, you know, that's quite a novelty, really. If they're going to start up their own brand, if they're going to start up their own contest, let them put their own spin on it, because we've put our own spin on it. We've made it a success here in Europe, but let's give them a go at seeing what they can do with it.
And obviously, you've been covering, as you said, Eurovision for quite a while now. Do you have any sort of favourite Eurovision moments in that time? I'm sure there are many, but any ones that particularly stand out for you?
Yeah, I think for me, it would probably be the French entry from 2018. It was Madame Monsieur, and they had a song called Mercy. And I remember watching the national final, and it was one of those songs, I mean, everybody will know when they hear a certain song for the first time, they just immediately click with it. And I did, I clicked with it, and I just fell in love with it. And over the next 6 months, I managed to go and see them at Eurovision itself. I saw them at the London Eurovision party, the sort of pre-party event of the contest, and I've seen them in concert twice in France itself. So it was just one of those where it just sort of they just sort of took over my life for the next 6 months, and I've been a fan of theirs ever since. So that's probably one of my my fondest memories of the contest in the last few years.
Well, it is a great way of finding out a little bit more about bands and musicians that you maybe won't have heard of. They'll come and do a Eurovision song, and it might do well or it might not, but it kind of doesn't matter, because then you find out more about their music and more about them. I guess we've done a similar thing with Dardy from this year, from 2020. We're kind of obsessed with Dardy now, even though Eurovision didn't even happen.
Everybody's obsessed with him, aren't they? I mean, his song just sort of took over the world in the past 6 months, didn't it? And I think he's done really well for himself. The contest didn't take place. He's still getting radio play here in the UK on Radio 2. He was on Radio 1 a couple of weeks ago as well as their sort of song of the week. And people just seem to be obsessed with him. He's very funny on social media. He covers Eurovision songs on live streams. And he's got the perfect formula to try and get people to stay involved, whether they are a Eurovision fan or not. So fair play to him. He's a great guy. He's got some great music and he's doing all the right things.
Now, in terms of, we're obviously talking about the Eurovision not happening this year in the form we are used to. What are your hopes for next year, apart from obviously it actually happening?
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? I think we're all just sort of starved a little bit. We had some online concerts and stuff like that to try and keep us entertained this year. But I think for next year, I think the hopes are that we're going to get some sort of contest. And the EBU, the bosses of Eurovision itself, have put in these rules where if they can't all come together in Rotterdam next year, they're going to have some sort of backup plan to try and get each artist to perform in their own country. So we are definitely going to get some sort of contest one way or another in 2021, which is, I think, what we all deserve right now, isn't it?
I think you're probably right. Well, James, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about the Eurotrip podcast and giving your thoughts on some of the big news at the moment. If people want to find out a little bit more, want to make sure that they are subscribed and listening to your podcast, how can they do that?
Absolutely. So we are the Eurotrip. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Acast. And then if you can follow us on Twitter too, we are at Eurotrip Podcast.
So we were mentioning, obviously, earlier on about your thoughts on the American Song Contest, and we would like to get them. So if you do have any thoughts on that and how you think that might be, would you like to see America take part in Eurovision as well? Do let us know. We're on Twitter at @poirnull. We are also have a Gmail address if you want to send us a little essay about your thoughts. It's nullpoirpodcast@gmail.com.
Just a little essay, if you don't mind.
Just a little, not a big one. Like, you know, a small one. A digestible one, bite size. We're on Instagram, nullpoirpodcast on Instagram, if you want to just drop us a little Insta.
DM.
Direct.
DM. DM us.
DM us, slide into our DMs. You can do that. And please, if you have enjoyed this episode or any other episodes, do give us a review. We're on Apple Podcasts, obviously. We're on SoundCloud. We're on Spotify. Give us a 5-star review, why don't you? Thank you to all those who've already done that. That really helps us. And yes, tune in, subscribe, so you can hear when the next episode's going to be.
That's the idea. Right.
That is the idea.
Shall we do some American accents to end? Because I'm getting out of here. Yeehaw!
Let's blow this popsicle stand.
What?
Let's blow this popsicle stand. That's what they say in America.
Thank you for listening to Nullpoir.
Howdy ho!